Hi, welcome to Speaking of Sex with the Pleasure Mechanics. I'm Chris.
I'm Charlotte.
We are the Pleasure Mechanics, and on this podcast, we guide you in creating a more loving, soulful, satisfying sex life on your own terms. Come on over to pleasuremechanics.com for the complete podcast archive, and while you are there, explore the wealth of resources we have to offer you. Definitely sign up for the Erotic Essentials. It is our free online course, and it is a treasure trove of resources and ideas and strategies that you can put into place in your sex life to create a happier erotic life for yourself and those you love. What could be better? You can also check out our online mastery courses. We have courses on everything from couples massage to foreplay to butt play to kinky sex. Whatever skills you are looking for to up-level your sex life, we have you covered. And when you are ready to master new erotic skills, use the code SPEAKINGOFSEX for 20% off the online course of your choice. Okay, so it is 2018. It is January. We have recovered from our flus. Hallelujah. It was a brutal one. And we are back. And we are in the middle of a tremendous cultural moment. For the past many months, really since the beginning of Trump's election cycle, there has been a shattering of the culture of silence about sexual abuse and assault. Some are calling it the Weinstein effect after Harvey Weinstein was revealed to be an ongoing perpetrator of sexual abuse and harassment. There have been dozens and dozens of famous men and not so famous men called out for sexual assault and abuse. And this has happened in every sector of society, every industry. And there's been revelations around things like the USA gymnastics team and the doctor abusing these young girls for years, and the USA gymnastics team knowing about it and paying girls off to be silent. And now there's the Aziz Ansari case, where a woman told her story about a date with Aziz that ended up in a night of very violating and abusive sex. Okay, so how I'm thinking about this is sexual abuse and assault has been pervasive across culture for thousands of years. It has been supported by a culture of silence and shame. And those of us that are in it knew how pervasive it was. I've always known. I'm surprised when I meet a woman who has not been affected by this in one way or the other. And usually upon further conversation, they can identify situations. I've said for years now that we are all affected by our culture of sexual violence. It is affecting all of us. It is a swamp we all live in. And as the culture of silence has been broken, the voices seem deafening. There seems to be endless reports, and everyone's kind of, who's next? Who's going to be taken down next? What's going on? And it's not surprising for most of us, but what I am hopeful for is that as these voices rise, as we start making sense of what people are saying and reporting, and we understand the patterns going on, these are the voices that are going to carry us into our new sex culture. This is a good thing that's happening. It's just painful right now.
Yeah, it's so uncomfortable to hear all these stories and hear all the pain and recognize stories of our own or people we care about or just feel astounded at what humans do to each other.
Well, we've all played a role in it, right? Some of us have been victims many times over. Some of us have been perpetrators of different levels of sexual violence. Some of us have been complicit in silencing other people, right? It's one, because it's so pervasive, because it's this cultural sickness. As these stories are coming out, we're all seeing ourselves reflected in all these different ways, and we don't really know the way forward. And in this podcast episode, we're going to be talking specifically about the Aziz case, but mostly focusing on painting the picture of what's coming next. What is going to replace this cultural sickness that we're all in, this culture of sexual violence? What will it look like next? That's what I want to focus on. And we've been talking about this for months now, like when the Harvey Weinstein thing came out, Charlotte and I sat around our dining room table late at night and said, do we talk about this? What's our role talking about sexual harassment at work? You know, we try to focus this podcast because we know that most of you are in long-term relationships, you're grown adults, and where do we focus our conversations in the world of sexuality? And so we kind of kept saying, okay, we're going to do it soon. We'll do it. So we kept rolling the episode forward and we have pages and pages of notes about how to talk about this topic. But Charlotte, for you, when this Aziz story came out this week, you felt like this was the time we should talk about this one. Why?
I feel like this case is much more relevant for our listeners because it's really about understanding the nuances of consent and how to have good sex and what bad sex looks like, even if you don't really mean for it to be uncomfortable and not respectful. So I just felt like there was a lot more in this case because it's this gray area that was more relevant and important and useful for us to look at together. I feel like the Weinstein and the Louis C.K. feel like more clear-cut abuses of power, some criminal activity
for sexual Weinstein. Sexual harassment at work versus...
Yeah, right, the nuances of dating and relationships that feels like more our world as opposed to... Yeah, that feels more relevant for us and our listeners.
Right, this story about Aziz, it's really how sexual violence, how that culture of sexual toxicity permeates all of our sex lives. And this was a date gone wrong in many ways. It was a bad script being played out. And so many of us can relate to different parts of this. The coercion, the lack of enthusiastic sex, the kind of getting what you can as fast as you can. So we're going to go through this. And we'll link on the show notes page at pleasuremechanics.com to some articles about this story. The original story, as told by the woman on this date, Aziz's response, and many of the editorial responses to it. And again, we're just using this one story as a launching point to talk about the sexual culture we are all in. I am not interested on who's a criminal, who's not a criminal. Like, that's not relevant for this discussion. We really just want to focus on how this affects us all, how we see our negative sex culture, our toxic sex culture impact us when we're trying to connect, we're trying to have fun, we're trying to play with another human being, and it goes so horribly wrong that people end up feeling violated, abused, used, and hurt.
When so much more is possible.
Well, yeah, and that's what makes me so sad about this, is it's the potential we have as sexual human beings. We haven't even discovered yet, yeah. Right? It is astronomical. It is so amazing and what beautiful. We can create together. And those of us who have tasted moments of that, like if you can think of your most beautiful, intimate, erotically alive, sexually pleasurable encounters, they can be some of the best moments of our life. And the way we connect with other human beings and have so much fun and pleasure in our body, right? That's why we do this work, because the potential is so amazing. And what people are experiencing day in and day out is this wounded, hurt,
it's just so far from what's
it's
possible.
So far. And people just get so hurt and then carry that hurt into the rest of their lives. And we hear from you guys all the time that you're in a relationship now that is hurt by experiences from your past, right? So these aren't like bad experiences that you then get over the next day and move on with your life. This pain and this hurt rolls forward in the way we trust other human beings, the way we can feel vulnerable with other human beings, what we expect from other human beings. And it's such a drag on human potential. Mm. Okay, so in this story and in many of our stories, two people were attracted to one another. They exchanged phone numbers. They flirted a bit. They went out on a date. They went out to dinner. and then they went back to someone's house. Okay, so that's, we're setting the stage.
Right. And the woman reports that it was rushed. Like, as soon as the meal was over, there was still wine there, and she felt rushed that he was ready to get back to get to business.
Right. And so already in that detail, we're seeing a split, a schism start to open up between what is the intention of this date, of this connection? Is it to get to know one another as human beings, enjoy one another's company, flirt and play with that attraction? Or is it to go through the niceties so that we can then have sex? And people who are dating now, and one of the reasons we don't talk a lot about dating is Charlotte and I have now been together for 11 years. And so we haven't been on a date in 11 years. And it's not our level of expertise because we're not on the dating apps. We're not having casual hookups. We are in a long-term relationship. So that's where we tend to speak out of. But we know that some of our listeners are dating. Or when you think about back when you were dating, there's this pattern of the courtship and then do you want to come up for a drink is often that segue where you go into a private room, someone's house, and then there's that question of how do we continue that romantic flirtation versus how quickly are we going to escalate into the sexual realm? And once we start escalating into the sexual realm, what happens then? And this is where we see things start going really wrong because they don't come back and put on some music and relax and maybe dance together. And I think one of the things that was so disturbing about this case is for people who have watched Aziz's show, Master of None, there's some great scenes in that show of that kind of romantic connection. Mm. He's madly in love with this woman and they end up snowed in together and they spend all night like playing games and talking and cuddling and being in bed together with their clothes on. And it's so refreshing to see because that's what so many of us want, is that relaxed, spacious connection that slowly builds and the tension builds, the anticipation builds. That's what so many of us crave and want out of intimate connection, out of sexual connection, is the slowness, the unfolding. But instead, what we see in this woman's story of her date with Aziz in real life, and then, you know, what happens to so many of us when we start getting into a sexual encounter is all of a sudden it's really rushed. It goes from 0 to 60 really quickly. And it feels like you're locked into this script that once you start, you can't escape. And so he puts her up on the kitchen counter. He kisses her. All of a sudden the clothes are coming off. Oral sex is happening. Hands are on genitals.
And he's going for a condom.
And he's going for a condom.
And apparently this is like 10 minutes.
Right.
So this is just not enough time. Like, this is just not fun for a lot of people. I mean, you know, sometimes it can work, but probably on a first date, for most people, that isn't going to be the best case scenario. Slash is super problematic.
Right.
You know, it
it can get overwhelming. There's not time to build consent. And this is one of the things we're going to be talking about, is what does active, enthusiastic consent look like in real life? How would that play out? And by rushing really quickly through taking clothes off and all of a sudden hands and mouths are on genitals, it locks you into this sequence of actions that leads up to penetrative intercourse. Without any communication, without any tease, anticipation, building up of tension. And it assumes this sequence of event. It is a script. And when we get into scripts, especially with new sexual partners, it ignores who they are as a person and starts using them as an object. And this is the other piece in this story I really want to talk about, is the devastating emotional effects of being used as a sex object non-consensually. When you are just playing out someone else's script of what they think sex should look like that night.
Their fantasy.
And no matter what cues you give off, no matter your participation in it, you're like a sex doll where he's putting his hand on your penis again and again. He's pushing your head towards his penis to initiate oral sex. He's chasing you around the apartment trying to have sex, right? And this happens in all of these different ways. It's a form of coercion where you're not getting enthusiastic consent, and so you're trying to wear down someone's defenses by being persistent. And what's so messed up about this and why so many men use this strategy and so many women get confronted and scared during this strategy is this is a strategy that has been sold to us in romantic comedies and in the notion of romance and how men and women are supposed to interact. Men are supposed to be the aggressors and persistent and chase after what they want, and women are supposed to be coy and deflect and defer and be demure until they finally give in, right? That is a script that men and women have been locked into that strips women of their agency, that puts men in this position of like, I need to get what I want and I need to keep chasing it, and that's what makes me successful sexually.
And this is so important. This dynamic is one of the most important dynamics to undo. So if you want to be a good guy, you have to interrupt this script that will come up for you when you're in dating situations, when you're in any kind of sexual situations, and you need to like interrupt it again and again and again until you unlearn it. It's so
rushing to get as much as you can as quickly as you can before the opportunity goes away.
Or think yes, and thinking that no means not now. Let me just keep trying. Let me get her another drink. Let me try and do a little more seduction of whatever that looks like. But it's this idea that it's just needs, she, he just needs to keep trying. She's just being a woman. She's just being a good girl,
right.
And is hanging back until she really wants you.
And what is the women's responsibility? What skill do women need to bring to this part of the interaction?
They need to use verbal language to express consent or not being interested, or saying, I'd like to slow down right now, please. Can we just pause for a minute?
And this skill requires A, feeling into your body and deciding what you want authentically in that moment, and then saying and doing things that support that decision. And this is kind of the skill we're talking about, is asking for what you want, setting boundaries, and we have other episodes about this. We'll link to that in the show notes page for this show. But you need to start practicing this before sex.
Practicing this, yeah.
Practicing asking for what you want and setting boundaries. And this shows up in all parts of our life, and we all need to get better at when someone says, hey, you want to go for Chinese food? And you don't really like Chinese food, but you're like, okay, sure, I'll just order the noodles. When what you really want to say is, Mediterranean would be much better for me, thank you.
Right now. Can we do that
instead?
Does that
work for you?
Yeah.
Oh, no, you don't like Mediterranean. What about Turkish? There's a new place that just opened. Let's go check it out. How do we have those conversations, both with the people we're dating with? And I think, I was going to bring this up later, but we're here now. When you're dating someone, set boundaries, make requests as part of the dating process before you get sexual. See how they react to your requests. Develop that language with each other. Like, negotiate the restaurant. Don't just go with the first one you choose. Negotiate the restaurant. Negotiate where you sit at the coffee shop on your first date. And practice that ability of saying, oh, I'd be more comfortable over there. Let's do that. And then see how the person reacts. Develop that rapport. Because what happens, so many of these skills that we try to develop in our social lives and then translate into our sexual lives, as soon as clothes start coming off, as soon as arousal starts building, so many people go into aroused anxiety.
Yeah.
And we lose skills that we need to negotiate great sex. To connect with another human being, empathy, compassion, listening, communication, paying attention. Somehow, when people start building arousal, these skills tend to go out the window.
Because both people are often so anxious, and we need to be compassionate with ourselves and with our partner, that we understand that we have just all gotten super stressed out because it's...
We're anxious, which means being over aroused and fearful of what might happen. We are shamed, which means scared of revealing who we truly are. Some of us are triggered from past trauma, and so we lose the ability to communicate. Like, there's layers upon layers of murk that starts building up as soon as we're in a sexual context. And part of our job here at Pleasure Mechanics, part of what we're trying to guide you in doing, is detoxing, clearing that murk away so we can show up in our sexual relationships with more authenticity and clearer heads and better communication skills, so we can kind of show up for sex the way we would show up at the grocery store for our job, right? Like with all of our facilities on board, like all of our faculties on board, I think I meant to say, and really show up as like authentically us and
fully engaged and present.
Yeah. And with like all of our emotional skills intact, like, oh, you don't want to do that right now? Cool. What do you want to do instead? Like we would do if we were going to the movies and they didn't want to see the horror movie we wanted to see. But if someone rejects us and our initiation in bed, all of a sudden we can become a weepy mess of rejected hurt.
But that's right? What
and
culture...
this is all natural. Yeah. Right? Yes, this is cultural. This is natural.
Well, especially for men. I feel like, I'm sorry.
That piece around rejection for men. But all of us experience all of this to some level.
Yes.
Right?
But that moment when men are rejected sexually, or what they perceive to be rejected, even if they're just saying, I'd just like to slow down for right now, is a really powerful moment for men, because it can be this moment where your entire masculinity is on, is being, what is that
it's
word?
It's being challenged.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so let's go back to the story, right? So Aziz initiates all of this sexual contact, 10 minutes, they're doing oral sex on each other. At some point, she goes to the bathroom, she splashes water on her face, she tries to come back, she tries to say, let's slow down, let's just chill out a bit. And this is an opportunity for him to show up and be like, cool, no problem, let's hang out.
Which is what he says.
Which is what he says, but not what he does.
Yeah, right? He does for like a moment.
Instead, then... it's like, all right, now it's time to give me oral sex. And he reinitiates, he re-goes back into that pursuit, into the chase after getting laid. And I think this is interacting with that defense mechanism about being rejected, right? For his perception of being successful, for having a successful date, something needs to happen. The orgasm needs to happen. Like the wheels are already turning.
And in his script.
Yes. And this is part of our cultural script is like, once you get those wheels in motion, like it's got to finish. Stop. You give him blue balls. Like we have all these myths around the inability to just like slow way down and stop. And so this is another skill, is the ability to be like, all right, we're done. And we might revisit this later. We might not. We might circle back to it. And she even says, what about on a second date? And he's like, here's another glass of wine. Now it counts as our second date. Let's keep going.
And she had hoped that he would give her a massage, or they would just like a foot massage, like she, or a back massage. I can't remember what she says, but like she was just hoping to connect. Like she was still interested in him both sexually and as a person. It seems like at this point it was just moving too quickly. And I think that's a really important point. That it's sometimes just about slowing down. And if men can...
It's always about slowing
down. It's always about slowing down.
This, in the Erotic Essentials, one of the lessons is called The Thing We All Need to Do to Have Better Sex. And the lesson is about slowing down. And it's about slowing down these encounters, but also about slowing down your touch. When you're doing massage, going, you know, from the thigh to the hip, if you can slow down that stroke, the body absorbs so much more sensation. And as you're slowing down, you get to understand how your touch is feeling. And this brings me to the next point, which is about exquisite attention to your partner. One of the big issues here is that he did not pay attention to her nonverbal cues.
At all.
He didn't care, or he didn't pay attention, or he hasn't developed that skill of that kinesthetic empathy of knowing how your partner's body is responding to your touch. And this is something I think, because we developed it through massage and erotic massage and sexological body work, where we were being paid to pay attention to someone's body and we were just in that role of giver. When I am inside Charlotte's vagina, for example, I was going to say someone, but it's been yours for 10 years. When I am making love to someone and I go a little bit too fast, you know, and I feel a tiny little muscular contraction that tells me, oop, too fast. The moment that impulse hits my fingers, I can slow down and back up and ease out. Or the moment during a massage where I just hit the muscle and just a little bit not the right way, and I feel that, and I feel her breath catch, I can then slow down and back up and go back to that place of just right. Hitting that place of just right where you're leading someone into arousal and guiding their body, but not going too fast. And if you do something that doesn't feel quite right, you notice right away. That is this place of beautiful lovemaking, right? Where you're paying such attention to each other that you don't have to say, oh, that was too fast, but you can say that. Like, you have the agency and the space between you. The container is set for that verbal communication, but your bodies are paying attention to one another. And this skill, which I admit is an advanced sexual skill, but this is where we all need to strive towards, of when we are erotically engaging with someone, we are paying full attention to them. And we are noticing everything they are telling us verbally, with their breath, with their muscular contractions, with how they move towards or away from us. Dogs are a great teacher of this, because when you're petting a dog, if they like what you're doing, they'll lean into you, they'll roll over to give you their belly. They have all this nonverbal language to tell you how to pet them. And if they don't like what you're doing, they'll kind of get up and trot away and shake it off, right?
But it's a such...
And we don't chase that dog being like, come here, let me pet you.
It's just such an advanced skill. And I feel like that's a hard thing to do on a first date. Of course, ideally, we are all at that point where we're paying such exquisite attention to their nonverbal cues.
But why is it hard to do on a first date? Because, I did it on a lot of first dates, one night stands.
But I think partly because people's anxiety is running so high, and because they're in a script that is culturally mandated, and it takes undoing all those things. And that's partly why moving so slowly, I think, is a wonderful way to start, because it allows your own anxiety to start to drop. And to, like, get present and to breathe. And then you can pay more attention to yourself, your feelings, and the other person's body, and begin to actually treat them like a human instead of like somebody who you are playing out your own fantasy with. And I think that's what a lot of people found so hurtful and upsetting about her story, and I think that people resonate with, is that having had the experience where they're having sexist sex, where a man is treating a woman like a body and not a person, and it's unpleasant, and it's violent, or it's on this gradient, it's on this spectrum of violence where you're not being treated as a human, and you can be a good person and still fuck up in this way and not be clear about consent. And this is what good guys need to learn, and this is where we need to push our sexual encounters to have more verbal consent.
Well, it's about consent, yes. So learning how to give enthusiastic consent, learning how to withdraw consent, how to use verbal language and nonverbal language, both sides of that equation.
Yeah, which is hard.
Which is hard.
And so takes work.
There's that. There's about slowing down.
Yeah.
So you can develop that rapport,
right,
and start learning how to pay attention to one another and ease into the sexual experience. And there's clearing up all of the shame and anxiety that leads us to goof up in all of these ways.
Yeah.
So those are three pieces. And I think the slowing down one is the one we can all practice, whether you're in a long-term relationship or not, you're on a first date. Be the person that, instead of rushing towards oral sex, takes your partner's hand and just explores their hand with your fingertips for 5 minutes.
That is so memorable.
What does that feel like?
Just to feel the touch and the...
And this is when we talk about sexual confidence. It's always this kind of like, what does sexual confidence even mean? The rushing towards sex comes out of sexual scarcity. It comes out of this place in our culture that tells us, if you have the opportunity to have sex, you better do everything you can to take it, because the opportunity might not come again for a while. Right? And it also comes from this place of, someone wants to have sex with you, like, you're not worthy of a lot of people wanting to have sex with you. Like, you're not very good or beautiful enough or sexy enough or able-bodied enough or pretty enough. Like, you better want that person who wants you, because who else is going to want you?
And you better hurry up.
Yeah. Right? Like, our culture feeds us these messages all the time that none of us are good enough for good sex.
It's terrible.
There's not a lot of people out there that's going to want to have sex with you. So if you are in the opportunity to have sex, like, you do everything you can to make it work. Right?
It's so unempowering.
It's lies, and it's very profitable lies.
Uh-huh.
Right? sexual confidence comes out of this place that's, instead of all of those scripts kicking in, you're like, wow, this person's kind of interesting to me. Let me get to know her more. Let me get to feel him out. What are they like? Are we compatible? Maybe I kind of want to have sex with them. Maybe I don't. We'll figure that out over time. There's no rush.
We're just hanging out and enjoying this moment right here. We're just enjoying each other's company.
Yeah, and I'm going to sit on the couch and see how that feels like. And then I'm going to take her hand and see what that feels like. And if she doesn't feel ready for me to hold her hand, and she just slightly pulls away, like, I'll give it a nice squeeze, put it back on her lap, and go back to conversation.
Well, the lead up to the first kiss is so delicious, or can be so delicious, and so memorable.
And it's never something that's stolen. This idea of, like, steal a kiss.
Right.
Or, like, surprise them with a kiss. Like, that's starting your sexual encounter with a non-consensual act. No. Right? And we need to destigmatize asking for permission.
Yes, I think...
So many people think, like, if I ask you, may I kiss you now? Or I've been really thinking about kissing you all night, or... I want to kiss you. How would you feel about that? The idea of that being not sexy and killing the mood is part of rape culture. We're going to compost that idea. We're going to ask for consent at every step of the way and only go for the new standard, the new gold standard that is coming out of this deafening chorus of abuse survivors speaking up is active, enthusiastic, ongoing consent, every sexual encounter, every time.
And all throughout the sexual encounter.
That's the ongoing part.
Even if you want to kiss.
Active. It's not no means no anymore. That's the old standard. It's not even yes means yes anymore. It's ongoing, active, enthusiastic. So active is their whole person is showing up and you can tell that they're excited about what's happening. It's not reluctance. It's not resignation. It's not going along with it. It's active, like, I am here for this. I am saying hell yes to this pepperoni pizza. I'm not tolerating it. I am, like, into it.
It's not that I'm just not saying no.
That's the enthusiastic part, is the, like, yeah, this is happening. Fuck yeah. Right? It's not yes means yes. It's fuck yeah means yes.
And what does that look like for people? Because I feel like this is where a lot of women don't have a lot of experience being super verbal and enthusiastic in their yeses in a sexual context. Yes, we can all move towards that.
That's a skill we're going to all learn together. Yeah. What does that look like? It means when you're kissing someone, their hands are active, their body isn't gone slack. Like, we're not doing sex to each other anymore.
We are looking for great sex.
We're collaborating.
Where, like, your pleasure, the woman's pleasure is centered, is important, is valuable, is desired. It's not just giving it up so that a man can masturbate into a woman.
And we're paying attention enough to see when that happens. The moment someone loses engagement, we're noticing, we're pulling back, and we're checking in. It is not fragile. You can interrupt, you can adjust for comfort, and then come right back. And sometimes you need to build up a little more arousal again. You know, if you go and pee and wash your hands and get cold, like, you need to be warmed up a little bit again, but you can come right back to it and you feel taken care of and you feel seen and you feel validated by someone's attention. Whew. And I think you're right. Like, in these conversations, I don't want to alienate people by setting this vision for sex that's so beyond where people are at.
Right.
Because the sex all of us are having, and the sex I used to have before I made it my life mission to work on it.
Uh-huh.
The sex people are having is because of the sex culture we are all living in. It is the scripts that are fed to us. It is the behaviors that are dictated by the social norms. It is the skills we are encouraged and not encouraged to develop. And that is what we are all changing together. We are going to create a world, and, you know, Oprah got on her Golden Globe stage and said, a new dawn is on the horizon. And we all paid attention to that because it spoke to this hopefulness that we are going to create a sex culture where the new norm is not this violating, semi-abusive, semi-consensual mess that sometimes people find some pleasure in. No, not good enough.
Right. Not enough.
The time is up, or whatever the button said. we are going to create a sex culture where people have the skills to actively consent, to ask for what they want, to feel no more shame, to show up fully in their authentic eroticism, and then engage with each other out of that place. That is what we're going for. And we are going to work backwards and baby step our way together, develop these skills together to start doing that within our relationships and out in the world. Like, so many of these skills, as I said, can be practiced socially, and then you bring that skill into your sex life. And so the next time someone asks you to be on a committee that you don't really want to be on, you say, no, I don't have space for that in my calendar.
Thank you, though, for the offer.
I'm so thankful that you asked, but no. You don't do things that cause you resent. You don't do things that you're reluctant about. And you understand the difference. Like, sometimes you have to, like, you know, life has its murky places and you, like, have to do things sometimes you don't want to do, but are part of your other responsibilities, right? So I'm not saying, like, I'm never going to take out the trash again because I resent it. Like, there are things we have to do. But when it comes to your consent and your agency, we all need to practice yes, no, maybe, negotiating, and paying attention to how other people are feeling. This empathy, this compassion, this I am, like, trying to have sex with you and I can't even tell if you're into it or not. No, not good enough. And just one piece, like, this whole question about, like, whether or not this was rape, is this illegal, blah, 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 blah. Like, those are all questions that the pundits can go over. But I want to honor the fact that this kind of experience is hurtful. It's painful. And part of the reason it's painful is because when you are trying to connect with another human being and they're not paying attention to you enough to honor your cues, when they're overriding your discomfort, when they're trying to do something to you that you don't want done to your body, and you have to navigate that and survive it and then go home and process it, it's violating. It's painful and it breaks down your trust. And so when the next guy takes you out and gives you a glass of wine and tries to initiate a kiss, already in your body is like, what's going to happen this time? Am I going to be violated again? Is he going to be violent with me? And speaking as someone who has experienced the whole gamut of sexual abuse, from being abused as a child to, you know, abducted and raped by a stranger, to this kind of violation where I was trying to be on a date with someone, trying to get to know them, and ended up having sexual contact against my will, this was some of the most painful pieces of my sexual history, was when the trust and the hopefulness for romantic connection, when you go in with the hope that this person is going to respect you and treat you well and get to know you as a person and care about what you want, and then play in that place of sexuality where we're going to give each other pleasure, when that is interrupted by a script that starts treating your body like an object, that starts overriding your discomfort, it is heartbreaking. It's so painful, and it really breaks down social trust and trust between men and women, or women and women, because I had this with other women too, and men and men. Like, this is not really actually that gendered as much as it is. So I just want to honor that for people. Like, if your sexual history includes this kind of sex, but not outright assault, and you're finding yourself triggered by these conversations, and you're trying to find yourself within the spectrum of survivors, we are all survivors of this sexually violent culture. We're all in it. We're all being hurt in different ways. We're all hurting other people in different ways, which hurts just as bad. Like, maybe you're a guy listening to this, and you're like, I've had this kind of sex with women, and I regret it. I see now that it's painful.
And I didn't mean to.
And it's just what I knew how to do.
Right. Because that's what culture tells you to do.
We honor you too. Yeah. And you are also a victim of this sex culture. You have also been stripped of your potential.
And agency.
And agency. And so we are all in this together, and we are going to recreate a new sexual culture together. And that is why we do Pleasure Mechanics. This is why we do what we do.
Yeah, it's to undo all of this.
And lead the way for, you know, and be part of a movement. There are so many amazing educators doing so much amazing work. But be part of this revolution, this movement to create a new sex culture for us all, with the question and the hopefulness of, when we clear up all of this sexual shame, all of this sexual violence, all of this toxicity, we free up all of that human energy, and all of that human connection and start connecting sexually out of a place of love and respect and fun and pleasure, what then is possible for the rest of the world? What kind of human potential does that free up to solve these global issues, to show up for each other in family, in friendship, as coworkers, to start creating solutions to the global problems we are seeing? What does that create for human culture as a whole when we heal this sexual wound that has been festering for thousands of years? What then? And we are grateful to you that you are listening to this podcast, that you are engaging in these questions, that you have hope and optimism for your own erotic life and haven't given up, and that you will create healthier sexual behaviors so you can have more pleasure and more orgasms, yes, but also so you can express more love, so you can have better relationships, so you can have more energy yourself for whatever you like to do in the world. So you can be part of this movement. A new sexual culture is being created here, and we are envisioning it together. So we would love to hear from you. Come on over to pleasuremechanics.com. Tell us what you're thinking about this moment. Share your experiences. And know we will be back with you next week with a brand new episode. We will continue to unpack sexuality and sex culture and sexual pleasure one episode at a time. You can find our complete resource archive at pleasuremechanics.com. Join us in our online courses. And when we say things like foreplay mastery, yes, it's about fingering techniques and handjob techniques and how to touch boobs, right? Like, it's all of that, but it's also about communication, asking for what you want, finding agency, finding your authentic desires. It's that
developing too. Confidence so you can feel comfortable slowing down and really building arousal before right. You get to penetrative intercourse. So you have this whole gamut of skills, of sexual skills, so you can feel like, I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, your lover says, that doesn't feel good. Okay, I got 20 other things that might feel good. Let's try them all, right? So when we talk about sexual techniques, yes, it's techniques, it's physical techniques, but it's also attitudes and embodied values, and it's a whole new approach to sex. That's what we tried to pack into our online courses. Please explore them. We have a 30-day money-back guarantee. If it's not for you, no hard feelings. But enroll, see how it feels, see how it feels to embody these new skills, see how it feels to be part of our community, and learn with us as we transform this culture one sex life at a time, starting with yours. All right, I'm Chris.
I'm Charlotte.
We are the Pleasure Mechanics.
Wishing you a lifetime of pleasure.